The Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello everybody, welcome along to your latest Tilehurst End Podcast extra in association with our sponsors ZCZ Films and footcoaching.com. My name is Dan Wimbush. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us for this show. I'm recording this the day after we've beaten Cheltenham 1-0. So nice to be basking in the glow of a Reading League victory for the first time in absolutely forever. I thought it was a great performance last night. Was it perfect? Absolutely not, but there were so many encouraging building blocks from the youngsters. A really bold call by Ruben Selles to make so many changes, send out such a powerful statement as well. I think it can only be a good thing in the long term for even the most senior of players to know that, look, if you're not going to do the job that I'm asking you to do, you're going to be out of the team, and not just out of the team, out of the squad. So it was a bold gamble. It paid off. We got the win. It wasn't always pretty, but look, big things start small. So look, fingers crossed we can start to be looking onwards and upwards from this point. Now, hopefully everyone has been enjoying the main pod as well. Ross and Ben doing a fantastic job pumping out episodes. Very much encourage anyone to go and listen to that. We here at the Pod Extra, it's just kind of the sprinkles on top of your ice cream here. We like to offer a little additional content. I said there is no real set schedule for what I'll be recording and who I'll be recording with. Simeon and the guys, very kind over at the Tire Centre, just kind of give me free rein to record. So hopefully people are enjoying it. But if there is specific things you'd like me to go off and try and do, very much open to feedback. You can find me on Twitter at Wimby, of course. Today's show, a little bit different. I'm not with my usual media cohorts. I've kind of let them have the week off. And instead, well, I say I'm letting the media off. I'm not, because today I'm speaking to Simeon Golam, who is the EFL digital editor over at Sky Sports. So we're going to talk to him. We speak about all things from how the perception is of Reading over the last decade and so. We talk about FFP and the pros and cons of that. We talk about his role and his job and, you know, some of the criticisms that get levelled at Sky Sports and what, you know, people like him are actually in control of and the editorial decisions they make. And we also discuss things like how to possibly get into the industry yourself if maybe you fancied a career in sports media as well. So lots of different topics to get into with Simeon, and I thank him very much indeed for his time. So, without further ado, let's get into the interview.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Right, I am delighted to be joined by Simeon Golam, who is the digital EFL editor over at Sky Sports. Simeon, thank you so much for joining us today. First of all, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, Wimby. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me, especially at this stage of the season where it's still, well, I guess it should be exciting to talk about football still at this stage of the season. But obviously, with everything going on at Reading at the moment, I imagine it's a tenser atmosphere than it should be in August amongst the fan base.
Well, look, we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, just after Reading have picked up their first win in 15 as we've beaten the mighty Cheltenham 1-0. So it's the perfect time for me to be talking about Reading. But I mean, the obvious thing that I, you know, I pointed this out in the intro, but you're not a Reading fan. So, you know, a bold one to get here on the Tilehurst Podcast Extra. First of all, let's pull the curtain back. All the cards on the table. Who do you support?
I support the mighty Brighton and Hove Albion, and there has never been a better time to be a Brighton fan. Rarely a more frustrating period to be an EFL journalist covering Brighton, because they got promoted the season I started this job and haven't had the decency to be relegated again. So I've never been able to actually cover one of their games. But that's probably for the best, because when I did back in a few years ago, when I just started this job, the season we went up and I had to do the occasional Brighton game, it wasn't particularly easy. So I do prefer being a neutral observer upon the EFL. It does make things a lot easier for me professionally. So yeah, but it's we're blue and white brothers, aren't we, Reading and Brighton? So
absolutely. So you know, if you chart the histories of Reading and Brighton, we're kind of on that up and down crossing over arrows together. You know, 20 years ago, what Brighton in League One, Tier Three, whatever you want to call it, Tier Two, and Reading in the Premier League, and it just goes back and forth. But look, hopefully the good times will return for us, and hopefully the good times for you will keep going. I mean, 150 million quid in the bank account means you're not going to be in danger of failing FFP anytime soon.
As long as Chelsea keep paying for everything for us, then I think we'll be fine for now. So.
Absolutely. Well, look, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on is because I think it's always fascinating for us. I mean, we're talking about this off air. I mean, me being a Reading fan and hosting this podcast and being so involved with the Tilehurst End over the years, so in that Reading bubble that it's difficult sometimes to get that kind of outside perspective. So as someone that, obviously does cover the EFL, and you've covered Reading through the ups and downs over those past few years. What is sort of the general impression of Reading as a football club and everything that we've kind of gone through in the past decade or so?
It is a frustrating one because it's from my perspective, my job is obviously promoting the EFL on Sky and trying to talk about it as this amazing product, this exciting product, great games, great drama, unpredictability that you don't often have in the top league in terms of, I mean, we've seen it even with Reading, for example, one season you were a penalty shootout away from reaching the Premier League and the next season literally sacking managers. You know, I mean, you don't have to tell your fans, it's sort of as good as anyone really. But yeah, it's I can't stand having to talk about the kind of stuff that Reading are going through, because it's not what I love about football. It's not what anyone loves about football. But it's been frustrating to watch because there's so much potential there. Obviously, as someone my age, I'm 33, growing up, I've seen Reading in the Premier League. I've seen, obviously, the Steve Coppell side and then the Brian McDermott era and that kind of thing. So it's the potential is there to get high and be better. But it just shows, as I said, I'm a Brighton fan. You're Reading fans, obviously, I'm talking to. In terms of like size of club, Reading, I mean, it's fairly similar, you'd say, if not Reading, maybe a bit bigger historically. And it just proves how important good ownership is in terms of any club, how a club can be run. You can say FFP this, FFP that, money, finances, but if a club is well run, then the sky is the limit to an extent. And it's just, it is always so frustrating when you have to talk about points deductions and sort of financial issues. And we have brilliant people at Sky who cover this stuff. We have excellent journalists at Sky Sports News who do this kind of thing. It's the side of football that I despise and detest and hate talking about, but obviously it is a necessity because it does happen so often. And clubs do, to some extent, have to be allowed to fail, but you obviously never want it to be yours.
You talk about the kind of the journalistic efforts and getting this kind of information. A lot of the pains for Reading fans will be have is we need that information, you know, we need that clarity. I mean, pull the curtain back a little bit from your kind of end. I mean, you know, you're one of the key stakeholders with the EFL. I mean, are you guys given any kind of extra steerage? Are you kind of alerted to things before upcoming coverage? Or do you kind of find out at the same time we do almost?
I think we occasionally hear things a bit early. It does depend on sort of the situation, the club. When it comes to legal matters, it's always a bit sketchy. We do obviously sometimes hear things a bit early and we know things are going to happen. Often the problem is, I imagine the frustration is, like, I think we're talking about this off air as well, like last season, when you know something's going to happen for months and months and months, but it doesn't quite happen yet. I think the problem now is often there's like too much information and too much sort of leakage and stuff. So it does, we do end up in a situation where we know something's going to happen for a long time because there are sources and leaks and this and that and the other, and we know, as we said, it's going to happen. So we just have to kind of sit there and wait for it. And we can't really report properly because we're talking about, for example, a relegation battle that we know is going to completely change, but it hasn't changed yet. So there's constant caveats and that kind of thing. So it is very frustrating from a reporting perspective, that kind of thing. And I think the problem is because of how much information is out there, we do know more than we have in the past of this kind of thing, especially in the sort of the internet era and the modern sort of time and that kind of thing. So it does end up seeming like these things are far more protracted than they used to be when they're not. It's just we intrinsically know more about the processes and the stages because more of this information gets out than it used to. Because I think the modern fan is much more interested in the sort of the running of the club and the behind the scenes of the club than they used to be because of the way fandom has evolved in many ways, I guess. So whereas, I mean, it might, I mean, 30, 40 years ago, I'd be willing to bet that most match going fans wouldn't know who sort of the names of like the board, you know, that kind of thing. They wouldn't know the names of whatever. I mean, they didn't have directors of football then, but you know, that kind of thing. They'd know the players and the manager. But now it's like a fan will know because of podcasts like yourself, which is great. It's a great, but there's so much more information about clubs out there that it makes everything seem a lot sort of, as I said, more protracted than it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, what have you made from obviously covering the league as a whole? What have you kind of made of the EFL's efforts to kind of shore up clubs and make sure finances and think we don't see too many things like we've seen at the likes of Bury and Macclesfield over the years? I mean, what have you kind of made of the whole approach to financial regulation and just, you know, trying to protect clubs?
I mean, what the EFL always tell us is there's only so much they can do to stop owners buying clubs. They say we're a league organizer. They say we're a league organizer. We're in charge of this and that. We can't actually interfere with a private owner buying a private business. It's not within their realm. They have their tests and they can get in the way to an extent, but there are times where, I mean, the perfect example, for example, is Mel Morris in Derby. On the face of it, he looked like the perfect owner, and he's probably run Derby into more trouble than they've ever been in, and that's why they find themselves in the situation they're in now, and the situation a year or two ago where it looked like they could go out of business. What would the EFL have done if they'd gone and what would have people said if they'd gone and stopped that from happening? Like, and then you can't predict the future, you can't predict what's going to happen. They have their tests, but at the end of the day, I think the thing that clubs find it hard to accept and is hard to accept is, at the end of the day, clubs do have to be allowed to fail. And I know they're bringing in the regulation, they can try and control it as much as they can and stop it as much as they can. But at the end of the day, businesses have to be able to fail. And as much as football is a strange business, it is still a business. And it's obviously nothing no fan wants to hear, but it is the reality. Without clubs sort of being able to, you can't give everyone like a safety net and a sort of that to do that kind of thing, because it's not practical, it's not reality. It's not something the EFL can really control. They can't see the future, they can't see what an owner is going to do. If someone comes in and they have the funds to buy a club, they can't stop them really doing that. And I think I always read sort of, oh, the EFL, how could they have let this happen? Or how could they sort of, how are they letting this happen? The fact of the matter is they don't really have the control over that. They don't own all the clubs. They're not the sort of the head of this massive company. They're a league organizer. They're a league organizer, and they've got clubs that sort of join their league, and all they can do is, if the clubs break the rules of the league, then they can do something about that. Anything outside of their control is outside of their control. And that's not to say they're a perfect organization. They do have a lot of flaws, a lot of problems, but I do get a bit defensive about some of the things I read, because some of the sort of the abuse that goes in their direction is just stuff that is beyond their control.
Yeah, I mean, from a Reading fan point of view, we've been through the mill with the EFL. Obviously, a couple of points deductions, transfer embargoes. I think we're all getting fast becoming experts on FFP and things like that. But
yeah,
I think from our point of view, it's consistency. I think that's what we long for. And as a fan, sometimes I think the one thing with FFP that, you know, sometimes personally bothers me is it doesn't seem as easy to work through, because you look at a club like Stoke, losing tens of millions a year, and they're able to convert equity into this and that. And there just seems to be various, and you've seen it obviously with the Premier League with Chelsea and contract lengths and things like that. It's sometimes you question, I think, what the whole purpose of FFP is. Is it to create a uniform set of rules, or is it to protect clubs? It's a quagmire. And I suppose from someone that has to cover it for a living, it's equally hard for you to, you know, you'll get a story about clubs losing X amount of millions, and I suppose you'll get all these questions thrown at you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, that's why I keep quiet on social media, because it can be a bit of a nightmare. From a personal, non-professional perspective, I despise FFP. I think it's a protectionist system designed to help keep clubs that sell more shirts in certain places at the top of the pyramid, and I don't think it'll ever happen, but I think the only way forward would be some kind of global spending cap for like clubs everywhere. And I think maybe what we're seeing in Saudi Arabia might hasten something like that, because suddenly the teams at the top of the pyramid are getting there. They've seen a pyramid higher than them, a tree higher than them, and they might not like that. And then it might sort of change the rules a little bit. But it's the loopholes, the way you can get around FFP, like we've seen clubs sell stadiums back to themselves and this kind of thing. As soon as you get into stuff like that, it's not a good system. It's a system that was supposedly designed to like stop another Portsmouth happening, but it hasn't and it won't, because as it's the nature of businesses and businessmen and business people and chairmen and club directors and boards, is they will always try and find ways around it to compete, and there will always be loopholes, there'll always be dodgy this, that and the other. I mean, we've seen what's going on with Manchester City at the moment. But in essence, if a club is bought out by rich owners, why shouldn't those rich owners have the right to spend as much money as they want within the system they can? And it's just, why do Manchester United have more right to spend more money than Manchester City just because they make more money? It's you might as well just say, right, who has the most seats in their stadium and who sells the most shirts abroad, right? They're Premier League champions, you know. And I know we're talking about Premier League here, but it's obviously the most easily relatable example of everything that's going on at the moment. So it's not a system I like. It's not a system. I think it's a system that's almost a lie for what it was created for.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I don't like talking about it, because it's the grim side of football that I'd rather not focus on. I like focusing on the players, the talent, the stories within the leagues. And it's just, but it does essentially obviously, I mean, fairly enough, if your club looks like it might be going out of business, then it's obviously going to be the most important thing to you. And I totally understand that. But from my perspective, it's if it happens and I start seeing points deduction stories and FFP stories and embargo stories, it's like I'm going to go get a coffee and then turn my app office on for a day or two, because I just don't want to. This is not what I want to talk about. This is not what any football fan, and I'm a football fan, it's not what any football fan wants to talk about. It's depressing. It's why I did sports and not news, because I just wanted to talk about sport.
Yeah, I mean, as a Brighton fan and everything that went on with losing the Goldstone Ground and stuff as well, you're only too aware of how off the field issues can just completely swallow up your joy of going to games. I mean, I'm, you know, as a Reading fan, I want to see my club signing new players, building up squads and stuff. But you're always just, you know, the conversation's always, oh, when's our next tax bill due? When's this due?
Yeah.
I mean, look, my own personal opinion as well, slide somewhere with yours. I don't like FFP in its current iteration, because for all of the reasons you've outlined, it stops people that want to advance their club from doing so, at least turbocharging it as well. I mean, the EFL will correctly point out, look at teams like Brentford that have done it this way or the other. But then look at teams like Bournemouth that spent a lot of money and basically snuck up quickly, and Wolves, before they could get punished. So it's not really doing its job. My system has always been, I think you should just say to owners, right, you want to go and spend £100 million next season, you've got to go put £200 million in a bond somewhere. So if you decide to go away, your costs are covered. As long as you're prepared to do that, you can go and spend what you like. And I think that way it would say, right, if you're a Jack Walker type that wants to come in and transform a Blackburn again, do it. But you can't be, a fake shake that doesn't exist. Something that happened at Portsmouth or a situation with Reading where we had Anton Zingarevich by the club promising, you know, he had the backing of his father, who's the fifth most well-off oligarch in Russia, and actually it turned out that he didn't have access to any of that money, and he just borrowed against our parachute payments. So it's a really difficult balancing act. But let's talk about on the pitch stuff, because we could slowly drive ourselves mad trying to talk about FFP and things like that. I mean,
from the day-to-day, he'll do a better job of it than me.
Exactly, and we'll leave that to the main Tarlestem podcast guys as well. This is the extra; we get to have a little bit more fun when we do. I mean, from a day-to-day basis, so sort of talk us through your job at Sky and sort of the main bits you like getting on with.
So, I oversee the EFL content for Sky Sports Digital. So I'm kind of any kind of live match coverage or sort of any EFL interview or any EFL feature or most of our EFL content. I do a podcast with David Pratton. We do championship predictions. Sadly, we can't talk about Reading this season on that, because obviously not in championship anymore, but hopefully soon.
Reading, bonus section. Yeah. Little tiebreaker section.
For Pratts, that might be a bit of a relief, because I think Reading are probably top 10% of dogs abuse he gets from their fans in terms of their predictions, which comes from, unfortunately, we've been doing it for about 4 or 5 years and Reading haven't been great for a lot of that time. So you do invariably predict them to lose more than they win, which tends to rub fans up the wrong way, which is completely understandable. No one wants to read their team's going to lose, but it's the reality when you're odds against in most games. But yeah, that's basically my job. My job is to try and get people interested in the EFL, people trying to engage in it, watch it on Sky, and just sort of cover it and just have fun with it, really. So yeah, that's my main thing. That's why, again, I get so frustrated with FFP and stuff, because that's not really how I see my job. I'm more of a, I want to talk about the games, I want to talk about sort of our product, that kind of thing, rather than the sort of the depressing news stories, which are important, but I try to often leave to our key reporters, who are great at covering them, and then obviously we have to then weave it into our coverage, because we can't avoid it and we can't ignore it. But yeah, that's basically what I do. And I love it. It's great. I've been doing it for 6 years now. I've been at Sky for 9 years, but I've been doing just EFL for about six. My first playoff final was Reading versus Huddersfield, which is not one that will be fondly remembered on
here. Commiserations.
To be honest, it was also one of the worst football matches I've ever watched in my life. But obviously, I was buzzing to be down there. I took a picture of Yapstam as he walked out the tunnel, and he looked like he was going to punch me in the face, which was a terrifying moment. But other than that, yeah, it's been frustrating to cover Reading for the few years since then, because you know what the club could be and the potential could be, but it's not being allowed to flourish in the way it should be.
No, we appreciate that. And again, just apologies for making you sit through that game. I was there. It was just the absolute worst. And Reading, you know, we hold that proud record, I think, along with Sheffield United, of most playoff finals having never won one. So when we do win one, it'll be worth it. Yeah, we've lost an old Wembley, new Wembley, and Cardiff. An unfortunate hat trick.
It's probably as someone covering a match, the worst thing you can ask for is nothing happening for 120 minutes and then penalties, because it gives you no chance to write anything or cover anything, and anything that we're talking about happens in the last sort of 2 minutes of the action. So it's just like you want a fairly clean, dull 3-0 with all the goals in the first half as journalists. That's what you're after. It was I cover the EFL Cup as well. And I think my worst moment as a journalist was when it was Man City versus Chelsea in the Carabao Cup final. And Kepa, it was the game with Sarri where he refused to come off at the end. And the whole, it was a match where Sarri looked like he was about to be sacked just before. And I wrote this whole thing about sort of Sarri's redemption, earning respect, because Chelsea were really good in that final. And then this thing happened in the 119th minute.
No.
That completely, it was literally like, it was, obviously it was a figurative rather than a literal rip up, because it was on my laptop and I didn't throw my laptop onto the pitch or anything. But it was just like, it was literally 90 minutes, 118 minutes of work all had to be completely just thrown away. And that is what you're dealing with in that situation. So yeah, it can be fun, but it can also be quite a stressful job and a stressful experience. But I mean, it's not real stress. It's covering football for a living. So yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
I mean, how hard is it as well? Because you know, you have this remit for the entire EFL. You know, 72 clubs. You know, the popular thing that will get thrown at Sky, and not just Sky, most media organizations, you only cover like Leeds, and it's all just, you know, the five or six biggest clubs get all of the content, all of the coverage. How hard is it to balance things out against, you know, commercial, editorial, and where does it all play in?
It is a bit frustrating when I read it a lot of the time, because I mean, as a Sky employee, I can't control everything that happens at Sky. I can't control how Sky Sports News portray stories. I can't control what matches are picked, for example. But I do know often that we get complaints both ways on matches. We get fans complain when we move their games, then fans complain when they're never on TV. So it's like sometimes you can't win in that respect. But yeah, I mean, obviously there is a leaning towards the top clubs in the Championship, just because it's just me doing it. And like it or not, the most sort of interesting story and the most important story often in the EFL is the teams that are on their way to the Premier League or the promotion race in the Championship. That is just the fact of the matter. But I'm the only one who does it full time for digital EFL, and I do try and cover as much as we can. I do try and, when we do our match coverage on a Saturday afternoon, for example, I do try and give as much remit to League One and Two as we can. And I know we're going to get loads of Wrexham accusations this season of Wrexham bias and this and that and the other, but the fact of the matter is, it's a fascinating story, whatever way you want to look at it. So we are going to have to talk about it to some extent. And if the interest is there, there's a reason why it's talked about at the end of the day. So, but we do interviews throughout Championship, League One, League Two. We speak to managers and players throughout all the leagues, throughout all the season. During the playoffs, we go as big as we can on League One and League Two. And it's just a natural thing that then someone will see an interview about Leeds and say, you only talk about Leeds, what we call Sky Sports Leeds. And it's not how I operate. It's not how we operate. Frankly, if I was only in the job I was to just try and become Fabrizio Romano, I'd just tweet Man United transfer news. I'm there because I love the EFL. I love covering EFL stories. And there's great EFL stories all the way through. But we do all we can to cover everything we can, but it's not always possible with the limited resource and budget and time that we have. And we do have to accept that stories about Man United and Liverpool are going to dominate the news agenda, because it's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I suppose a good place for us to kind of wind down and finish is, do you just overall impression of the EFL? I mean, you say you've been, you know, running things for the last sort of 6-7 years, but I mean, what do you make of the strength of the EFL? I mean, from the outside, you know, you're seeing teams like Southampton make £60 million off players, £30 million off players, and you would think, okay, it's stronger than ever. But from a pure fan point of view, watching the Championship over the last couple of years, especially since COVID, I think it's probably more competitive, but I don't think it's as strong as it was. As someone that does get that kind of outside perspective and sees the thing as a whole, I mean, where do you think it is? Do you think we're in the league is only getting stronger and deeper? Is it just getting more, is everyone coming together?
I think there are some clubs that are getting savvier and better run, like we saw what Luton did last season on a limited budget. Again, we talked about FFP before, and I think that is another issue of parachute payments, is other clubs that are going down suddenly having all this money that other clubs don't have, and it does create that sort of divide. But I think in the end that the stronger, wealthier clubs are still going to finish close to the top, and I don't think it's quite as much of an issue as people make out, because we do see teams without parachute payments get promoted every so often. And in any league, the stronger, bigger teams, more than often than not, are going to rise to the top. And I still think the Championship is... no league is perfect, no system is perfect, but I think the Championship is better than most in terms of... I do think almost any team starts with a shot and a hope in a way that realistically... I mean, you can talk all you want about Leicester City, but no team, not every Premier League team is realistically going to start the season thinking we can win the league this year. But I do genuinely believe any team, especially now, any team in the Championship can have genuine aspirations. If things go right, they recruit well and get a decent system and a decent style of play in, that any team can genuinely start the season thinking we can finish in the top six this season. And we've seen it over and over again. And that doesn't mean that... I mean, Leicester are probably going to win the Championship this year. And we saw how strong League One was last year, for example, and sort of the big teams. But even then, Plymouth, you saw... I mean, there was some stat at one point last season in League One that something like five of the top six teams have played in the Premier League since the turn of the century. And three of the top eight or nine have played in Europe since the turn of the century. And then, but then you had Plymouth Argyle finishing top on 101 points. And that is just... that's what sort of fascinates me so much about it, because the nature of the Football League and the EFL is... the best players and the best managers go up and leave, and the best clubs go up and leave, and the worst ones drop down. So it does kind of have like a leveling method. And every season you start with this kind of... you have a rough idea where some clubs are going to sort of finish and some clubs are going to do. But often you start with an almost fresh slate, so many new players, so many new managers, so many new sort of owners, even ideas, teams, philosophies, styles. Every season it does feel like it's almost like a reset every season. That's why I love covering it so much, because there's no... You come in and start every season, you're like, right, this is going to be brand new. It's going to be completely different to last season. And it is. I mean, we have had a crazy few years of COVID and that kind of thing. And I do think the strongest Championship I've ever seen in my time was 2019, the year before COVID, when it was Norwich and Sheffield United who went up from the Championship. And you had Aston Villa with Jack Grealish and Tammy Abraham finishing sort of fourth or fifth. And then you had Derby County, obviously the Frank Lampard side, where you had Mason Mount, Fikayo Tomori, Harry Wilson and that, and that they scraped into sixth. And then you look at the teams that were sort of pushing for sixth last season, you're like, there's no way those teams would have sort of got anywhere near that year. But that is just the nature of the last few years we've had and stuff. And it does feel it is now leveling out a bit more. We've moved a bit away from COVID. I think a lot of that crisis and the financial issues are sort of over from that stage, or at least we're moving away from it. And it does feel like we are getting back towards that point where we do have some genuinely strong teams at the top and strong teams pushing them up. Like, I have some idea who I think is going to win the league and finish second this season. But for example, last season, I never would have put Sheffield United second in a million years.
Yeah, and I mean, from a Reading point of view as well, I mean, we sat there I mean, last season, admittedly, we finished in the bottom three, but I think there was that stat that Reading were in the playoffs for more time than Coventry. So just shows the wacky nature of it and the fact that Reading got a draw with Burnley and we only lost in the last minute at Turf Road. At Turf Road, Turf Moor.
Turf Road.
Just correct. I think that's the Pro Evolution Soccer version of where Burnley play. So it is that thing of anyone could beat anyone. We've already seen it in League One in our brief return since. I mean, you know, Port Vale got smashed 7-0 at Barnsley and then go and beat us 1-0. And it's just around. And that is the beauty of football. I think as football fans, all we ever want is hope. And all we ever want is to see our team sort of moving forward and hopefully, at least with Reading, we are finally, fingers crossed, starting to move in that direction. But Simeon, again, thank you so much for giving us your time this afternoon. It's very much appreciated. And now any Reading fan listening will know exactly who to vent to. This is they don't like anything the Sky do. So there you go. Congratulations. So if you want to very quickly give yourself a burner Twitter account, now is absolutely the time to do it. But in all seriousness, where can people follow you on social media? I know you said you're not that active, but where are you online?
It's called X now, isn't it? I'm at SimGolem on X. And yeah, we try and do as much as we can. I've covered quite a lot of Reading stories in sort of recent years. I remember the most exciting was George Puskas, which never quite worked out, sadly. But that was a great story. I love any story where a player comes from sort of one of the sort of big European old guard to then come down and play in the Championship is always brilliant. I think Reading also got me in probably the most trouble I've been in social media wise and work wise in my EFL covering career. You may remember season four last, Reading versus Peterborough live on Sky, one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, was that this the 0-0?
Yeah, and I remember I put in, you can so easily forget when you're doing these live blogs that there are actually people reading at the other end. And yeah. I wrote something along the lines of at halftime, this has been a terrible advert for next season's League One campaign or something like that. Ooh. And yeah, it picked up a little bit of traction, and I got to sort of be a bit careful next time. but that was very, very bad.
Reading fans were very, very angry.
Yeah. It was a bad game. I mean, you stayed up that season in the end, so that showed me wrong.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a classic. And you do sometimes, however much I love covering football, you do occasionally get the odd game which is like, yeah, life's too short for this. And that was Reading versus Peterborough on like a Wednesday night in sort of, I think it was plugged in sort of like March or April time, yeah, from what I remember. And it was not a good football match.
It was absolutely not. Reading fans, I think, surrounded the team bus after that game.
Yeah.
It was, I think, one of Veljko Paunovic's final games. I think not long after we'd been beaten, hit by
that was
seven
a shame.
By Fulham.
Veljko Paunovic, I think, was one of my favourite interviews I've ever done, because I interviewed him right at the start when he started really well. And he was just so enthusiastic. He was so willing to chat. And he was so sort of good about everything, and so like enthusiastic. And he had so many good stories to tell, and he'd had such a sort of a varied, great career in terms of playing and managing. And then you do kind of, as I try and be as neutral as I can in my job, you do often have to deal with managers who are more easy to chat to, and managers who are maybe to sort of be a bit careful about it, more difficult to talk to, shall we say.
Yes.
And then you do end up getting a bit more of a soft spot for the ones who are a bit more receptive to you talking to them. Because I do understand the kind of the wariness of the media for managers and players. And I think, but I don't ask sort of transfer questions. I don't really do this, that, and the other. I have had some managers walk out on interviews with me when I've asked very reasonable questions just because I think they're in a bad mood that day. And then I do secretly black mark them in my brain and hope they fail miserably. but you never know who from my coverage, of course. But Veljko was one who I really, really did want to succeed, because he was such a good guy when I spoke to him, and it was a shame to see how it ended up. But he was a victim of the trajectory at the club as much as anything else. So,
well, at least now you've got Ruben Selles, who is by all accounts, from everyone I spoke to that spoke to him, is one of the nicest guys. So hopefully you'll get to...
He's on my list of potential interviews for this season, 100%. I'd love to chat to him at some point and pick his brain.
Building out that playoff final coverage and then the aftermath of when we've beaten Oxford to win the playoff final is my dream. But
would you rather go up automatically or go up through the playoffs?
If you tell me we're definitely going to win it, I'll go through the playoffs. I think Reading fans have been haunted. I said we've never. You have to go back to 1988 for Reading winning a major cup competition. The Simod Cup. I will allow you to look that up in your own time.
Yeah, I was born, so no wonder I don't remember it.
You are obviously in a great position for at Sky. I mean, there might be people listening to this who kind of want to follow in your footsteps and, you know, dream of working for Sky or for another major broadcaster covering either Reading or football. What kind of advice would you be giving to people out there and kind of the roadmap?
The advice I always give to anyone who's trying to move into, well, any career really, or sports journalism, is just speak to anyone and everyone you can about what you want to do, and ask if they kind of know anyone who has any kind of links in the industry or job in the industry. Feel free to sort of DM me on Twitter and I'll see what I can do as well. But I got my first break in the industry through obviously hard work and talent, blah, blah, blah. But you know what the world's like. I got my first interview for a job through one of my dad's, who was a pharmacist, customer's daughters who worked for a newspaper and managed to sort of get me an interview. So people, including myself, love feeling like they're connected. They love feeling powerful. They love feeling like they can hook people up with things. And anyone you speak to who thinks they will be able to help you out will do it in a second, because it makes them feel good about themselves. And it's just a fact. And that's what I always say is, do as much as you can, write as much as you can, do as many kind of internships and work experience and practice as you can. But also just speak to everyone you know, say, do you know anyone? What do you do? Be kind of, you have to be shameless about it. You have to put yourself out there. And then you'd never know what can come about through it. And then if you do manage to get a break and you do manage to get somewhere in somewhere, work as hard as you can and do as much as you can. Even if you feel like no one's paying attention, someone will always be paying attention and they'll always be aware. Management can often be quite bad at passing down praise, even though they're talking about how good they think you are in sort of meetings and that kind of thing. From my experience in my 20s is I was at a newspaper after about a year. I had no idea that they valued me in the slightest. And then when my boss from the paper I was at moved to Sky, he took me with him because he thought I was worth doing. And I he probably said about six words to me in like the 9 months I'd been there. And it was a shock at the time, but that's how I kind of got my break at Sky. And it's just, yeah. And it can be frustrating sometimes because you can think no one's noticing me and it's not worth it, but they are paying attention. They just are often, everyone can be caught up in their own thing and they just don't, are not good at like purveying it until it matters, but it will matter.
And were you kind of, if you are onto a lead and potentially looking to bring someone in, will you look at things? I mean, I'll obviously say the Tarlhurst End, but websites like that, will you look at people's work that they do on those sites? Because people say, well, no one's ever going to read that. But do people, you know, do people in positions like yourself actually read those fan blogs, those fan websites or personal sites?
100%. Yeah. What I will say is I think people don't appreciate that. How much research, for example, especially the people who make games, for example. I know for a fact that one of the senior producers at Sky, when he is covering any EFL game, even if he's doing a League Two game, he'll listen to three fan and club podcasts from each side, just because it's the, for the lower league clubs, I mean, as I said, I'd love to be able to cover all 72 clubs as in depth as I can. I can't. I know for a fact that I know less about Reading than everyone that's listened to this podcast. And I think it would be... I'm always deeply suspicious of journalists and people who claim to know everything about everything, because it's not physically possible. You can get very good at looking like you know a lot about everything. I've done it myself. You can research enough to make it look like you've got a broad knowledge about everything. But I know for a fact that everyone, as I've just said, listens to this, knows more about Reading than I do. So for stuff like this, there will be people when they're covering Reading games, when they want information, they will be listening to this kind of thing, because it's an invaluable source of information and no one knows a club better than its fans. And if you're ignoring that, even as part of the mainstream media, which is a term I hate using, but it is what it is, it's invaluable. It's something I always do, something I always read when I want to know more about a club and know more about a situation. It's where all the best information is about, especially lower league clubs. They're covered so much better by blogs and podcasts and fan sites. Then, I mean, sometimes you do have to take a lot of what's said with a pinch of salt, because you know there is a lot of bias there, and you don't necessarily directly use it in all your reporting because you know, but it is there as a kind of a font of information. It's brilliant. I love it. I love the whole world of fan blogging, podcasting. The more of it, the better. And it is noticed and it is paid attention upon. I mean, you see more and more things like Saturday Social and that kind of thing, and there are more sort of blogging. I mean, they're not the top 20 guys who do really good EFL coverage. They're popping up on Sky, and you do see more and more of it. And it is going to become more and more of the game as things go on.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for your time. Look, best of luck to Brighton for the season. I don't think you'll need much luck. I said, think things are going nice and swimmingly there. But look, fingers crossed for your sake that it continues. And as I said, anytime anything goes wrong with Sky and Reading, we'll now know who to pester. But look, I said, thank you so much for your time. Anything else before we go? Any final message?
Just to say that as a Brighton fan, things always get better and there's always hope and there's always optimism about the future, because you never know what can happen. We were in League One, 12 years ago. And now look where we are. So yeah, always have hope, always have excitement, always have optimism, because that's what football's all about. It's also about negativity and dread and worrying about everything. But,
right, but without, as I said,
without great despair, you can't have great joy. That's what they always say. So
I said, Reading won last night. So for me, football is back. And I'm sure if we get beat at home by Stevenage on Saturday, it will be gone again.
There's nothing more League One than buzzing about nicking a 1-0 win at home to Cheltenham with an own goal.
Exactly. It's what we live for. Simeon, again, thank you so much for your time. But look, hopefully
Cheers,
we'll catch
mate.
Up with you again one day
on.
Down the road.
Definitely.
Take care.
Bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
So once again, a massive thank you to Simeon for giving us his time on the show this week. As I mentioned in the pre-ramble for this show, no real set schedule with the pod extra as we go. I know Ross and Ben will be back next week as always. As for me, I'm hopefully going to speak down again with some Reading media in the next couple of weeks, whether it'll be Jimin and Andy, or we might try and bring in some other voices as well. I'm keen to try and make it as eclectic and get different voice on over the season. And again, if you've got ideas for, you know, things you'd like us to cover here on the Pod Extra, hit me up on Twitter at Wimby and of course at the Tile West End for all your regular coverage as well. And also a big thank you once again to our sponsor ZCZ Films, who have backed this show for many years. Big thanks to them. And of course, our brand new sponsor here on the Podcast Extra, which is footcoaching.com. If you are keen to brush up on your FIFA skills ahead of EAFC 24, go and speak to the guys at footcoaching.com. If you use the code TTE, you can get a discount on any of the coaching packages available. They will enhance your skills. They will work on all aspects of the game, not just the button presses and things like that. It's the mentality. It's practical tips and hints to help you improve your esports game. So look, it's the same way. If you go and want to see a golf coach or a tennis coach, you can employ these guys and they will help get you to that next level. Footcoaching.com for all the information right there. As for me, I am off. I said hopefully I'll be back in the next couple of weeks. We're definitely going to do a show before the transfer deadline day as well, and certainly after. We're back throughout the year. But look, fingers crossed we can get a win over Stevenage on Saturday and continue onwards and upwards. Only one thing left from me. Come on, you ass.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.